Okay, translation. Srila Prabhupada. Seeing the saintly person to be quite fat, Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear sir, you undergo no endeavor to earn your livelihood, but you have a stout body, exactly like that of a materialistic enjoyer. I know that if one is very rich and has nothing to do, he becomes extremely fat by eating and sleeping and performing no work." Purport, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not like his disciples to become very fat in the course of time. He would become very anxious upon seeing his fat disciples becoming bogies or enjoyers of the senses. This attitude is therewith confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj, who was surprised to see a saintly person adopting a Gyangora Viti and becoming very fat. In the material world also, we generally see that when a man who is poor and skinny gradually endeavors to earn money through business or some other means, and he then gets the money, he enjoys the senses to his satisfaction. Hello? By enjoying the senses, one becomes fat. Therefore, in spiritual advancement, becoming fat is not at all satisfactory. Okay, who's fat here? When Rishi Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who established the material world, a mission fulfilled, desire, Lord Chaitanya gave me shelter under his lotus feet. You know, when I read the purport, I thought what sprung to mind was actually Prabhupada. He wanted devotees to, eat lots. You know, when you come to Krishna consciousness, eat lots. You know, and I remember when it was very austere in the old days. So when people were thinking of blooping, they would, because there was no such thing as an amhata. You're either in or you're out. So when thinking of blooping, they would think, let me hang on for the Sunday feast. So you'd hang on to the Sunday feast, and then you're stuffed, because Sunday feast was really something. And then you're stuffed, and you think, "Oh, I'll just hang on." So you'd hang on, you know. But what sprung to mind was Prabhupada told actually Jaipataksvami to get fat. And actually, oddly enough, there was one time. Someone tried to kill Jaipataksvami, and they tried. If you ever meet Jaipataksvami, you see he's got a big mark across a scar on his neck. And actually, if he had been skinny, he would have died. You know, so it's nearly like Prabhupada knew that such a thing could happen. And yeah, if he had been skinny, he would have died. So that was an instruction he got. So actually, funny enough, in India, in the villages, you won't find any fat people unless they're quite old, you know. But you get they're all putly, skinny people. And I noticed that even the children are all skinny, because there's one village where there's a fat boy, and children come running for prasadam. And I always notice the fat boy, and it's all everybody. You know, it was like the annual joke when he comes, you know, when he's pushing the small kids out of the way and getting his prasadam, you know. And we're all calling him Moti when he's fat, you know, having a laugh. But generally, people who work hard in the villages, they're skinny. And then in the temples, you get the rich people coming from Delhi and places, and everybody's fat, you know, the small boy is fat, small girl is fat. Because actually, in India, it means skinny is not seen as beautiful, you know. If you look at the old Hindi movies, the girl, the dancer, is usually a fat girl, you know. Which kind of, it's amusing for us, you know. Like, we're because I do stuff like, I make, like, the Ramayan, I have to edit it down and make it small for the villages for preaching. And we're always joking about the fat girl dancing, you know, because they don't have to. And Ram, oh, Bharat, if you see the Ramayan, like Sita's wedding, Ram's fat, Bharat's really fat, you know. You know, like, they make them fat, you know, that's how they do it, you know. They think, like, I can put a skinny guy there as Ram, you know, put the fat guy, you know. So it's funny, different perceptions of beauty. Anyway, but in India, because that's where you kind of notice it. But anyway, that's, you know, obviously when the sadhus in India are usually very skinny. The Brahmins are usually very fat, you know. Have a, you know, like South Indian Brahmins have a big belly on them. But the sadhus, you know, traveling there, they're usually very, very thin. Very thin, like Kavi Chandra Swami. You know, he's a real sadhu looking. He eats this much a day, you know, just, it's like a little bit, just a little, you know. Because I used to travel with him in the villages, you know, and he was just eating this very little amount. And like, you won't get like Mahavishnu Swami, you won't get him, you know, drinking Tums Up and cold drinks, you know. They don't do that kind of stuff, you know. Because that's what you'd expect from, you know, you see the richer people, you know, the grihasthas, and they're all there drinking their cold drinks, and like myself. But, you know, so when Prahlad saw this very stout, he calls him stout, person lying down, he was confused a little bit, you know, because he was fat, you know, and he's saying, well, you know, you're supposed to be a renunciant, so how come you're not skinny? Like, you're performing austerities. If you perform austerities usually start with the tongue, you know, whether it's, I remember on Padyatra, there was one person who didn't speak for, he took a vow that he wouldn't speak for either 8 or 11 years, I can't remember which one. He would only say Sri Ram Jai Ram. You know, that's all he'd say. And he was ended up driving the camel cart. He had a cart pulled by a camel. And one day the camel ran off, and I remember him shouting Sri Ram Jai Ram very angrily. But he took his vow. So other people take vows of... You sometimes meet people in India who've taken a vow of... they only eat fruits. Only eat fruits, you know. And... that's all they eat, you know. Actually, you probably need to be quite wealthy to follow that vow, because fruits are expensive, you know, and not always in season. And then there's different people follow different vows. Different vows. Our vow is to eat prasadam, you know. It's our vow. Prabhupada didn't want us to take on extra austerities, you know. In other words, like, we didn't have to... all this panchabhishmika fasting and stuff like this, eating cow stool and urine and stuff. He was happy, you know, eat prasadam, you know, and it should be nice prasadam. So Prabhupada was very keen on this. Like when people go into Prabhupada's room, he'd have a thing of gulab jamuns, and he'd feed them gulab jamuns. Actually, there was a letter that he sent out to all the temples. Bajahari was temple president here. It was around 75 or 76. And it was saying that he wanted in the temple that some cooks to be cooking non-stop. He wanted rice, sabji, halva, and juice rice, sabji, halva, and puri for all the guests who come at whatever, any time of the day. They come, they'll have cooks cooking that. So that letter went out to every temple in ISKCON. Vajrahari was saying that it was unfortunate he wasn't able to achieve that. because it's quite a job. You need to have like full-time, a couple of people in there. But that's what, so the importance of prasad. So Prabhupada didn't want us to perform austerities like fasting and that. And also similar to this pastime is Magrari the hunter. It's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majalila number 8 or 7. And it's actually that my pastime was spoken in Varanasi. I'm going there in next month to Varanasi. And it's spoken, Lord Chaitanya was there. In Allahabad, he met Rupa Goswami and Anupan. But in a little bit later in Varanasi, he meets Sanatana Goswami. So there's a temple there you can go to where the two of them met together, and Lord Chaitanya instructs Sanatana Goswami there. I can't remember for how many days, but he instructed him. But in the course of that instruction, he told him about the pastime of Magrari the hunter. And how it kind of relates with this is that Narada Muni told Magrari to break his bow. You know, Magrari was half killing animals. Like Narada was walking in the forest and there was a pig, a boar, and its legs were broken and he was, you know, he's twitching along there, you know, and he sees a deer with the legs broken and injured badly and suffering. Especially if you see a very peaceful animal like a deer suffering, it's like you kind of like you feel really sad, you know. Or see some small rabbit suffering on the ground, it's like, you know, for most people they feel really, you know, oh gosh, poor animal. So Narada Muni, imagine Narada Muni sees these animals that are suffering purposely by somebody. Somebody had purposely, damaged those animals, and they were suffering really badly on the ground. So Narada, he preaches to Magrari. We had no idea that causing suffering was wrong to the animals. He didn't know. You know, his father had done it before him. He didn't know. He thought it was quite okay. Kind of enjoyed it even. And so when Narada tells him to break his bow, then Magrari is confused. He said, well, how am I going to maintain my family? What are we going to eat? And in this pastime, it's described that Magrari had so much food that he had to give it away. So that's where I'm paralleling it with this pastime, because this devotee who's just lying on the ground, not even trying to eat, you know, not even trying to, he's not working, he hasn't got a job, he's got no business plan, he's got no, you know, he's just, sometimes he says he doesn't get anything to eat for a few days, sometimes he gets loads of things to eat. Or sometimes he sleeps in a nice palace, or sometimes he sleeps under a tree in a bush, or sometimes people are nice to him, or sometimes people are not nice to him. But obviously in this situation, people are quite nice to him because he's got he's quite fat. So it's pointing out that, you know, like that Krishna is supplying the basic necessities of life, and there's no need to, as he says, no need to endeavor so hard as Lord Yashavadev says to his sons. There's no need to endeavor so hard for sense enjoyment in this human form of life. Such pleasures are available to the stool-eating hogs. So you don't have to try so hard for eating, and that it's Krishna will supply. So anyway, this is this devotee, and that's where Prahlad was surprised because he was fat. And so he actually asked him, you know, why are you fat, you know. So the main point, I mean, there's not much more I can speak about being fat. The main point, you know, it's Prabhupada wanted us to, you know, not to overeat, you know, and oversleep. And he wanted us to be active. He wanted to be actively engaged in devotional service. He didn't want anybody just lazing around. Although in some situations, he actually told devotees, you just have to chant Hare Krishna, you know. And he said, be happy if you go to Mangalarti and do that. But obviously, Prabhupada wanted some practical devotional service. He wanted us to push on the movement. He saw there was an urgency. And the main thing I found here, as with most chapters in Bhagavad Gita, in the Bhagavatam, the author is explaining how the material enjoyment, material life is overrated, and that one should actually take to the process of spiritual life. And there's two things have to be there. One is to have a clear understanding that the material world is temporary, and all things that you accumulate will also be of temporary nature. And side by side with that, it's not just that we just bash the material world, you know, like, you know, we make fun of it and we bash and all that, you know, like, that's easy. But we have to present the spiritual side of it, in other words, the higher taste. And that higher taste that we can read about devotees who have achieved that higher taste. And we can also see, we know devotees who, we can see from the symptoms, devotees who have achieved that higher taste are, you know, traveling the world, preaching. They're not just lying down waiting for people to come to them. But Prabhupada gave us the process of yukta vairagya, of utilizing, well, it's not just Prabhupada's process, but he explained how we can practically utilize that with money, print books, you know, have festivals, do different things. He showed us practically how we can do that. And so it's not that we're recommending people just to go outside and lie down on the ground and, you know, see if you get fat or not. but there's practical things. And Prabhupada wants to chant the holy name, to travel, to preach, you know, all these different things. There's many, many activities that can be engaged in Krishna consciousness, whether it's cleaning the temple, whether it's worshipping the deity, whether it's protecting the cows, whether it's growing vegetables on the land, whether it's traveling and distributing books, whether it's going on Harinam, distributing prasad. So many things that we have. So we're very fortunate in that way that we have this complete philosophy. And at the same time, as we don't give credit to the material world, we have to promote the spiritual world to develop, give the higher taste. And that higher taste, when you achieve that, then you will, you'll have no real interest in the material activities. Just like I have a few, I'll read a little something in this regard. Let the poets continue to rave about poetry. Let the Vedic scholars incessantly praise the nectar derived from Brahman realization. I myself will take shelter of a beautiful youth who is decorated with a garland made of wild flowers, holding a flute in his blossoming lips. This is Ishvara Puri. Ishvara Puri, actually, when Lord Chaitanya went to Ishvara Puri's birthplace, he took some earth. And he kept that. And every day he eats a few little pieces of that earth. because he understood the importance of his spiritual master. He understood that the spiritual master is the only way we attain devotional service. So I know when we went to the Prabhupada's birthplace, Mahavishnu Swami picked up a little bit of dirt. If you see him next time, I'm sure he has a little... My mind is, this is Rupa Goswami now, my mind is uninterested in becoming an emperor, unattached to the opulence and luxury of Indra, unconcerned about obtaining the mystic powers of the yogi, and not eager to obtain liberation. What does arrest my entire being is that transcendental person who roams the banks of the Yamuna River. He looks, even at a glance, like an incessant flash of lightning, whose complexion is like a fresh monsoon rain cloud. He is always embraced by the gopis, whose arms entwine him like creepers. So the great sages are they're giving us this vision of something very beautiful, that so that it will capture our mind, and we will, through the chanting and through the process, we will desire to associate with the Lord, our desire to be there. It's important to not just have rejected the material world, but also have a desire to attain the association of the Lord in the spiritual world. So that's the ambrosia of your beautiful lips, red as a bimba fruit, is life-giving syrup to Krishna or Radha. I am rolling on the banks of Yamuna, my poor heart filled with anticipation, praying for you with all humility. I'm guilty of being an offender, a rascal, a useless wretch. Yet I beg to kindly engage me, even in the smallest service, at your lotus feet. O most merciful lady, it will not become you to ignore this most distressed soul, for your heart is always overflowing with compassion and love. This is Rupa Goswami. So this is our process, actually, is to understand that we're insignificant. You know, we're not insignificant. We're very small, but we are not insignificant. We are something. You know, we're very, very small, and that also Krishna's mercy is attainable. You know, it's one thing thinking yourself very fallen, but you have to also think that Krishna is also very, very merciful. So although you're very fallen, you are also entitled to Krishna's mercy, you know. So it's described also, one who continues endeavor despite suffering the misery, threefold miseries, but yet continue to praise the Lord. For him, the kingdom of God is his rightful claim. So in other words, you may be suffering, but if you continue to serve the Lord, because even for those devotees, like after breakfast, we all have to go somewhere, distribute books, or whatever we're going to do. Weather is lousy, you know. You know, you're suffering. Somebody might not be nice to you. You know, somebody might say something bad to you. So many things happen, but we continue on to serve Krishna despite all these things, and you have to. That can only happen if you have a higher taste of some kind, and that is where Prabhupada gave the process of chanting, chanting your rounds and engaging in service. So, an association with devotees is very important. Reading Prabhupada's books, you know, all these things are the way how we can advance in our spiritual practices. Otherwise, the material world is kind of overwhelming. Just like we can say, oh, things are just not fair. Because you're in the material world, things will not be fair. You take the example of Narada Muni, who is the spiritual master of Prahlad. When he was a small boy, his mother died from a snake bite. I'm not even sure if he had a father, you know, as such, you know. But when his mother died, she'd gone out to milk a cow. I think I have it here somewhere. That was actually Narada in his previous life. Of course, I can never find anything I'm looking for. His mother died, so he felt, how do you say, like lost, you know, a small child, you know, and he just took to the forest. Jai, Sridharani Gopinanda ki jai, Sridharani Lakshmi ki jai. So it says Narada took Narada's mother was bitten on the leg by a serpent when she was going to milk the cow. Narada took a special mercy of the Lord, which is considered to be an odd or difficult moment in the mundane sense, is accepted as special mercy of the Lord. So imagine, like, if you're a small boy and your mother dies, it's a very difficult situation. But Narada just had to, because of his understanding, his spiritual insight, he understood as well, there's no point lamenting, you have to accept this as a special mercy of the Lord. It is a duty of a mendicant to experience all varieties of God's creation. So Narada travelled, and here, just like the python is, the devotee who's acting like a python is there. It's a duty of the mendicant to experience all varieties of God's creation by travelling alone through all forests, hills, towns, villages, etc., to gain faith in God and strength of mind, as well as to enlighten the inhabitants with the message of God. So that was Narada. And actually, Narada began to meditate upon the Lord in the heart, and he actually saw Krishna appear to him. And it's a different pastime. So the whole process of, whereas Prahlad is traveling as well, but the whole process to experience the world, and you get, you know, otherwise, if you just stay in a comfortable life, as Tribhuvanat used to say when he was here, that comfortable living and Krishna consciousness don't go well together. So the whole thing is take on some austerity for the Lord, travel and preach, spread the message. And this way, if you talk to any book distributor, he'll tell you, oh, amazing thing happened today, I met this person, they said this, they said that. And this is how we progress in spiritual life.